Hi there. Welcome to Bond Investment Mentor. I'm your host, Chris Nelson, and this is a podcast dedicated to helping community financial institutions master the art of fixed income investments. If you're working for a community bank or credit union and you have responsibilities for the investment portfolio, you've come to the right place. I'll be your personal investment guide as we help you boost your fixed income investment knowledge, level up your portfolio management skills, and help you gain the know-how you need to help your institution achieve its financial goals. In this episode, we're going to talk about the Federal Reserve's historic rate decision, the bond market's reaction to it, and other developments this past week. I also want to share some thoughts with you on how to approach fixed income investing and portfolio management when times get challenging. It can feel overwhelming these days, but I've got some tips for you. So settle in, make yourself at home, and let's get started. Hey there, welcome to Bond Investment Mentor. I hope that you're doing well. So, it was another uneventful week in the bond markets. Ha ha. I was having a conversation with someone this past week, and they mentioned it being an interesting week. I said that was just a nice way of saying it was terrible. Okay, maybe that's a little strong, but I think you'll agree we've all had our fill of volatile weeks and the current wild interest rate environment. At this point, please pass the non-interesting and downright boring. Please. Okay, so I want to start off today's episode with an apology. I was wrong. If you'll recall in the last episode, I had this to say ahead of the June Federal Open Market Committee meeting. I started to see some commentary as the day went on that began discussing that the FOMC would come out at the next meeting with a 75 basis point rate hike. However, I'm not convinced that's going to happen, and here's why. The Fed has really tried to maintain its forward guidance approach, sometimes to the point of over-communicating. And right now, they're in what's called their blackout period ahead of the upcoming FOMC meeting. This is the normal practice, as Federal Reserve policy prohibits Fed governors, regional presidents, and Federal Reserve staff from commenting publicly or granting interviews. The blackout periods last 12 days ahead of each FOMC meeting. So the next voice that we'll hear will be that of Fed Chair Jerome Powell at the press conference after the meeting wraps up on June 15th. So with no comments expected between now and the meeting, I think it's highly unlikely that they'd want to surprise the markets with a 75 basis point move. Well, that did not age well, did it? When I recorded that episode about a week ago, my outlook and the market consensus was still pretty firmly in the 50 basis point territory. Sure, the Consumer Price Index report hadn't been pretty, and there was a little talk about the Fed hiking rates by 75 basis points. But we were in the blackout period, and this was a Fed that didn't like to surprise the markets and maintained good communications with the bond markets. So I didn't see a high likelihood of a larger than expected move. But I did not have leak a story via the Wall Street Journal on my bingo card. On the Monday before the FOMC meeting, Wall Street Journal reporter Nick Timiraos, who I consider to be a Fed whisperer, released an article reporting that it was likely the Fed would institute a 75 basis point interest rate hike in an effort to battle inflationary pressures. The article mentioned that the inflation report had come in hotter than the Fed officials anticipated. A 40-year high will do that, and that the recent University of Michigan consumer sentiment data showing inflation expectations becoming more entrenched had also received some attention. Once the story hit the wires, the markets reacted, and how. The 2-year Treasury rate jumped by about 15 basis points in 15 minutes, going from 325 to 340 before pulling back a little. It was a similar story across the yield curve as yields adjusted to the news. The Fed funds futures market, which had priced in roughly a little bit less than a 30% chance of a 75 basis point hike, shot up and locked in 75 basis points for the June FOMC meeting, along with a 76% chance of a similar move at the July meeting as well. I admit I'm starting to get tired of talking about historical moves for the Treasury curve, but it was another one of those times. Before the CPI report was released, the 2-year Treasury rate was around 2.81%. In three trading days, it had shot up to 3.42%, or about 60 basis points. It was the highest two-year rate since 2007 and the largest three-day move in two-year rates since 1987. From 2 years out, the Treasury curve flattened and then began to modestly invert again out past the five-year mark. The slope between five-year and 10-year Treasuries was minus 12 basis points after the Wall Street Journal article hit the wires. As for the Federal Reserve's blackout period, I have this to say. What blackout? It's now apparent that if Fed Chair Jerome Powell wants to send a message to the markets when the Fed is in silent mode, it's just a phone call away. Okay, let's discuss what came out of the FOMC's June meeting. As expected, they did increase the overnight Fed funds rate by 75 basis points to a range of 1.5 to 1.75%. The move was the first 75 basis point move by the Fed since 1994. It was not a unanimous decision, with Kansas City Fed President Esther George dissenting in favor of only a 50 basis point rate hike. Later in the week, she commented that her decision was based on a more aggressive move, quote, adding to policy uncertainty simultaneous with the start of balance sheet runoff, unquote. The FOMC also increased the rate paid to financial institutions on excess reserves to 1.65%. In the announcement that accompanied the rate decision, the committee stated that economic activity appears to have picked up since earlier this year, and that the labor market remained robust with low unemployment. They also said that inflation remains elevated due to higher energy prices as well as broader price pressures. The FOMC also acknowledged ongoing supply chain issues and the Russia-Ukraine conflict were also contributors. The Fed also released its latest quarterly summary of economic projections, or the SEP, which provides the outlook of the FOMC members. The report showed that the members all expected to raise the Fed funds rate to at least 3% by the end of this year. Some members forecast that overnight rates could get as high as 3.375% by the end of 2022. Keep in mind that this is just a forecast, so while it tells us where their heads are right now, there's no guarantee that we're actually going to get there. At Fed Chair Jerome Powell's press conference following the meeting, he acknowledged that the rate decision had been driven by the CPI and University of Michigan reports, which came as no surprise if you had read the Wall Street Journal article. He indicated that he expected either a 50 or 75 basis point move at the next meeting on July 27th, and that 75 basis points was not definite. Powell also noted that he would like to see monetary policy mildly restrictive, as he called it, by the end of this year. As far as the start of reducing the Fed's balance sheet through securities runoff, the FOMC announcement only made a brief mention that they were proceeding as previously announced, and the Fed chair didn't comment on it at the press conference, but they have begun the process. So, how did the bond markets react to all this news? Why, they rallied, of course. After the FOMC announcement, the two-year Treasury rate fell almost a quarter point, with other longer rates also pulling back, though not to the same degree. It seemed like the market was staging a relief rally as they reacted to news that a 75 basis point rate hike next month was not a guarantee. As we wrapped up the week, market sentiment seemed to shift a little from concerns about inflation earlier in the week to concerns about recession, possibly. There are many investors who are wondering if the Fed will go too far and hike the economy into a recession, and Treasury yields have begun to pick up on that theme. As we wrapped up the week, the two-year Treasury rate was down to 3.18%, while the five-year Treasury was yielding 3.34%. 7-year Treasuries yielded 3.33%, and the benchmark 10-year Treasury finished at 3.23%, so you can see that flat to mild inversion in the yield slope. Right now, the 2s-10 slope is only positive by 5 basis points. Meanwhile, over in the Fed Funds futures market, we currently have about a 90% chance of a 75 basis point rate hike in July and at least a 50 basis point increase in September. At this point, the market is turning its attention to Jerome Powell's upcoming trip to Capitol Hill. He will make his semi-annual pilgrimage this week before the Senate Banking Committee and the House Financial Services Committee, and Fed watchers will be paying attention for more color from Powell on the Fed's outlook and potential moves in the next few meetings. As I said, at this point, we don't know if the next Fed rate hike will be 50 or 75 basis points. Since the FOMC meeting, we've had comments from Fed heads on both sides of the decision, so we'll have to wait to see what Fed Chair Powell has to say on the matter. Finally, in other fixed income-related news, mortgage rates remain on the rise. Freddie Mac reported that the average 30-year mortgage rate hit 5.78% this past week. That was up 55 basis points versus the previous week and the largest weekly increase since 1987. Since the first of the year, 30-year mortgage rates have almost doubled from the roughly 3% rate that we had in January. Freddie Mac also reported that the average 15-year fixed-rate mortgage rose 43 basis points this past week to 4.81%. The increase in mortgage rates has had a chilling effect on mortgage production, particularly for refinancing activity, and that should translate into continued slower prepayment speeds for mortgage-backed securities. According to a research report that I saw recently, about three-quarters of all mortgage borrowers are about 200 basis points out of the money, with an additional 15% that are 300 basis points out of the money. That translates into a boatload of people with no incentive to refinance, though there will be that occasional exception. As I've mentioned before, while the news is helpful for investors concerned about prepayment risk, it does increase the exposure to extension risk. If you haven't already, you may want to review your MBS holdings to see how their weighted average lives have changed in the past few months. While shorter-term securities like 10 and 15-year mortgage pools won't be affected as much, 20 and 30-year mortgage securities, as well as some CMO tranches, could extend in a slower prepayment environment. It's definitely worth taking the time to check to see how the MBS portfolio may have shifted in the recent interest rate environment. I've been having a lot of conversations with clients and other community bankers in the past couple of months as a result of the bond market sell-off and the surge in interest rates and market volatility. Based on those conversations, I can tell you that there's a lot of anxiety, paralysis, and second-guessing going on in some quarters. If that describes where you find yourself as you contemplate what to do with your institution's investment portfolio, I can assure you that you're not alone. I found myself doing what I can to support community bankers through these challenging times. I have one client I speak with regularly who has told me that she appreciates what she calls her therapy sessions with me. If I had to boil down all of these different conversations, it would come down to this. Chris, I'm not really sure what to be doing with the investment portfolio right now. I don't need to invest as much as I have been, but I still need to put some funds to work, and I'm a little unsure how to proceed. Honestly, I sometimes feel paralyzed when it comes to making decisions because I don't want to compound what's already happening in the portfolio. Let me share some thoughts and advice with you. A bond investment mentor, heart to heart, if you will. So, step into my office, have a seat, or you can lay back on that therapist's couch over there if that's better for you, and let's have a chat. First, it's important to remember that you're not alone, as I mentioned before. When times get tough with the bond markets and the investment portfolio, it's easy to feel like you're in this on your own. But I can assure you that everyone is in the same boat these days. As I mentioned to one client recently, you may feel like you're on an island, but it is the most crowded piece of real estate going right now. I also want to remind you that this isn't the first time that conditions have gotten wild. It was only a couple of years ago that we were dealing with a major collapse in rates following the COVID outbreak. Then, the Fed was acting aggressively to cut rates, and the market was rallying hard, with the 10-year Treasury rate eventually bottoming out around 0.53%. When these types of situations happen, and they will happen again, what's most important is to stick to the fundamentals and play defense with the portfolio. What do I mean by that? Well, let me share 5 tips for you to help you manage the portfolio in trying times like we've been experiencing. Tip number 1, always start with your balance sheet in mind. This was something that I shared back in episode 1 of this podcast, which was called First Things First. It can be so easy to get caught up in the moment-to-moment gyrations of interest rates, the Fed, yield curves, and the like. These things are important. Heck, the first part of this episode was all about them. But the rate environment is still secondary to what's happening on your institution's balance sheet and its underlying risk exposures. For example, what's going on with your liquidity and interest rate risk? How have they changed in the past few quarters? What risk exposures do you have on those fronts? I can tell you that liquidity is getting a lot more attention on the regulatory front, particularly since the market values of bank and credit union investment portfolios have fallen. What's happening with your loan and deposit growth? Have the trends changed there recently? As you consider these factors, they will help you to maintain a steady course when it comes to investment decision making. I periodically see security offerings from brokers that are described as great opportunities or great values, and in some cases, I'd have to agree. But what's important to keep in mind is that an investment candidate is only a great opportunity if it fits with what you're trying to do on your balance sheet. If not, then it's time to move on. It might be someone else's opportunity or value, but it's not yours. Tip number 2. When you're deciding on investments, focus beyond today. The investments you purchase today are likely to be with you for a long time. And during that time, the economy, the market, and the interest rate environment are all going to change. When that happens, you may find that your investments change too. Suddenly, that great investment that you purchased has morphed into something that you don't recognize, and it's dragging down the whole portfolio. It's vital that you think about how an investment will perform not just today, but in different situations down the road. This is a topic that I've discussed with several community bankers, as the bonds they bought a couple of years ago have changed as interest rates have risen, prepayments have slowed, call options have fallen out of the money, and bonds have extended. One of the reasons for this is that the focus back then was on one thing, yield. In the uber-low rate environment, investors wanted whatever would produce the highest yield at the expense of underlying risks that were there all along. In addition to current conditions, if the investments had also been considered in a scenario where rates were higher, it might have resulted in slightly different decisions that may have been less painful today. The same thing is happening in some quarters today. With rates moving higher, unrealized losses growing and investments extending, some investors are now focusing on one thing, duration, 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 and short, short, short. Now, I'm not saying that those aren't key factors, but they're not the only ones. Think beyond today and consider how changing future conditions could affect the investments that you're evaluating. Let's move on to tip number 3. Take steps to manage and maintain your portfolio's cash flow. I mentioned keeping liquidity risk in mind as part of your balance sheet approach back in the first tip, but this is important enough that it warrants its own tip. For many bankers and regulators, the investment portfolio is considered a source of liquidity because you can sell securities if necessary to raise cash as an offset to asset growth or liability runoff. That's true. But there's another way to create liquidity in the portfolio, and that's by structuring it to generate a stream of regular, steady, principal cash flow. With regular cash flow, you'll always have funds available if needed without having to liquidate positions. And if the liquidity isn't necessary, the funds can simply be reinvested. The cash flow can come from 2 sources. First, by laddering your traditional bond investments, you can provide regular payments of principal as the bonds mature. The second source of cash flow can come from monthly payments from mortgage securities. Because of their monthly payments, using MBS can provide a steadier stream of principal and source of liquidity. What I found works well is to combine the two with a portfolio utilizing both laddered bonds and mortgage-backed securities. The percentage allocated to each depends on your balance sheet and risk exposures. There I go back to tip number one again. Okay, tip number four. Pay attention to the structure and collateral of your investment securities. This is a factor that can either make managing your portfolio less stressful or potentially create more headaches for you if you don't pay attention. So what do I mean by structure and collateral? Well, here are three things to keep in mind. The first thing is the security's liquidity. Now, this is a little different from the liquidity risk that I mentioned earlier. What I'm talking about here is the ease with which you can sell the security. While we talked about managing cash flow before, there may still be situations where you decide to sell an investment. What you'll find is that all securities are not created equal. Some securities, like U.S. Treasuries, are highly liquid and can be sold very easily. Other securities are very illiquid, such as bank sub-debt, some corporate bonds, private equity and CRA investments, and so forth. Other securities will fall somewhere in between the two. As you build and manage your portfolio, you'll want to be sure that you don't hold too much in less liquid investments. Otherwise, you could be surprised when the bid you receive for your investment is nowhere close to where the fair value is indicated. The second thing to keep in mind is optionality. When you own investments containing embedded options, such as callable bonds or mortgage securities, you've given someone else the right to pay you back differently than the base case payment schedule. With a callable bond, the issuer can pay off the bond early, while with a mortgage security, the borrower can prepay at any time. This is what we call option risk or optionality. Optionality can take what looks like a well-structured portfolio and transform it into a portfolio that pays you a lot of cash when you don't want it and very little cash when you might like it. Unfortunately, it's almost impossible to build an investment portfolio that doesn't have some degree of optionality. However, by thinking about both current and future market conditions, as we mentioned in tip number two, and by paying close attention to the underlying loan collateral in any mortgage securities, you can mitigate the exposure and help the portfolio stay well-behaved. And finally, here's tip number five. Avoid the big bet or the Hail Mary play. I get it. An investor has a portfolio behaving in a way that wasn't what was planned or wanted. And so they think to themselves, I'll figure out what type of investment will help me offset what's happening, and I'll buy a lot of it to force the portfolio back toward where I want it to be. So they do it, and maybe it works. But most of the time, it only creates a new potential headache or risk that's going to need to be dealt with. It's kind of like the person who walks into the casino and places all their cash on one number and hopes for the best. As you may have heard others say, hope is not a strategy, and it rarely pays off. I actually saw someone try this once in a casino. It was at the blackjack table. They came in, bet all the money they had on one hand, and busted. It was over in about 20 seconds, and I remember thinking, what just happened? But investors are tempted to do this in challenging times. Here's my advice. Don't do it. Step away, take a break, and then get back to developing investment strategies that might not work overnight, but will be more likely to get you where you want to be. So to recap, here are the five tips. Tip number one, start with your balance sheet in mind. Tip number two, focus beyond today when evaluating investments. Tip number three, manage your portfolio's cash flow. Tip number four, pay attention to the structure and collateral of your investments. And tip number five, avoid the big bet or Hail Mary plays. If you stick with these guidelines, it will help you to develop investment strategies that should be helpful no matter what the market throws at you for conditions. Well, I see that we're out of time in our session today, so we'll pick up where we left off next time. So you have to get up off that couch now. But seriously, if you have any questions or comments about what we covered today, I'd enjoy hearing from you. And if you have some tips that have worked for you that I didn't mention, I'd love to hear them. You can email me at chris@bondinvestmentmentor.com or shoot me a message on LinkedIn. And if you're looking for other information and resources to help you manage your community financial institution's investment portfolio, head over to bondinvestmentmentor.com. Over there, you can also download a couple of free resources that I've created, including the pre-purchase due diligence checklists. These free due diligence checklists will help you fine-tune your investment decision-making and organize your pre-purchase process so that you'll have the answers you need both before and after the investment trade is executed. There are worksheets for 8 different security types, and each of the worksheets contains areas to capture relevant trade information, the reasons for the purchase, and the risks associated with the investment. They also include a list of resources to help in your bond analysis and evaluation, including the Bloomberg screens that are helpful in evaluating each investment type. Using the pre-purchase checklist will help you cover your due diligence basis and organize your investment analysis so you can spend less time analyzing bonds and be more confident in your investment decisions. To download your free copy of the pre-purchase due diligence checklist, go to bondinvestmentmentor.com and you'll find more information there to download them. Well, I'm glad that you stopped by today. Thanks so much for checking in. Bond Investment Mentor is written and produced by me, Chris Nelson. The information, views, and opinions expressed during the podcast belong solely to myself, and any ideas and strategies contained in the podcast are for educational and informational purposes only and do not constitute investment, accounting, or legal advice. Hey, if you know someone that could benefit from the information in this episode, would you mind sharing it with them? And if you like what you heard today, please take a moment to make sure you follow the podcast so you won't miss an episode. You can subscribe on any of the major podcast platforms or through whatever podcast app that you use. In addition, I'd love to hear from you via social media. You'll find me on LinkedIn at Christopher Nelson CFA and on Facebook at bondinvestmentmentor.com. I'd love to hear from you. I look forward to catching up with you again soon. Thanks for stopping by. Have a good one.